Intelligent Transportation Systems Podcast. We don't close for vacations. Here we are again. Welcome to the ITS Podcast episode 16 for August 2014. I'm Javier Sánchez Medina from the Intelligent Transportation Systems Society. If you still have 30 or 40 minutes on your vacations unscheduled, here you have a brand new episode where you can hear a fascinating interview with Jeff Allen, Executive Director of Drive Oregon. Oregon is proving an incredible living lab on many new smart mobility options like car sharing and especially electric mobility. So if you're a fan of electric transportation, you just can't miss this one. We also have a news mini section with some good stuff on a new vehicle making it to the market, propelled by, guess what, compressed air. But this is not all of it. Please don't miss the transportation history mini section, this time about flying cars. Yes, it's what you heard, flying cars. So let's move ahead, close your eyes, relax in your beach folding chair, no matter if you are actually in the beach or not, and enjoy.
This is the news mini section for August 2014. According to the Italian newspaper Il Messaggero, next autumn a brand new transportation system will hit the market. The new vehicle has been produced in Sardinia and tested by Air France and KLM as a service vehicle at airports. It will be propelled by using just compressed air to move its 280 kilograms. So it is a completely zero carbon emitting vehicle, with the exception of the electricity needed to pump the compressed air into their tanks. These airpods, as they are called, can go as fast as 80 km per hour, with an autonomy in a range of 150 to 200 km, and you can refill its tank in just 2 minutes and a half in a service station. Finally, two short news we will leave may be of your interest. Do you remember the IEEE conference on vehicular electronics and safety? Well, they have extended its submissions deadline to August 20. The last one is that next November, IEEE and the ITS Society are sponsoring the third international conference on connected vehicles to be held in Vienna, Austria. For more information, like important dates or submission guidelines, check this episode post at itsp.cicei.com, where we have included a link to this conference call for papers. Please circulate this information.
Transportation in history. Flying cars have been always a recurrent element of science fiction, movies, and novels. To name a few, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, Back to the Future, Harry Potter, Blade Runner, and Star Wars are some good famous examples we enjoyed in the movies. There also has been many examples in literature like the French comic series Valerian Spatio-Temporal Agent, firstly edited in 1967, or Ralph 124C41+, a science fiction novel written by the Luxembourgian-American inventor Hugo Gernsbacher in 1911. But what happened? Why aren't we using flying cars already? As a matter of fact, there has been a number of prototypes of drivable aircrafts. In 1917, Glenn Curtiss, the main competitor of the Wright brothers at that time, invented the Curtiss autoplane. That every vehicle was able to leave the ground, let's call it, to jump, but it never had the ability of sustained continuous flight. In 1936, the Autogiro Company of America successfully tested the AC-35, landing at a Washington DC park where it was exposed for 24 days, and then its configuration was switched to be a roadworthy vehicle, performing another exhibition. There are many more examples of early prototypes, like the Waterman's Aerobike, which had its first flight in 1937, the British military roadworthy Autogiro Rotabuggy, developed in 1942, or the steel-flying Taylor Aerocar, developed in 1949 by Moulton Taylor in Longview, Washington. The reasons why this approach to personal mobility hasn't succeeded, at least for the moment, are diverse. For example, this kind of vehicle should be able to safely take off and land vertically in crowded populations to be practical. Likewise, the cost of production of these vehicles should be more in line with other vehicles, and to date they have been extremely expensive. Of course, there are still dreamers among the engineers on Earth, so we can see new prototypes on the horizon. Two beautiful examples are the prototypes proposed by the company Terra Fugia. Check out this episode post site to watch a couple of short videos about these actual flying cars of the near future. So will we massively use them one day? Who knows? But in the meantime, the truth is that they are gorgeous pieces of tremendous engineering, and to many of us, as pleasing to see as the Gioconda in the Louvre. Well, it is time now to start with the central content of this episode, our interview to Jeff Allen from Drive Oregon. We really hope you like this one. We are today with Jeff Allen. He is Executive Director of Drive Oregon, a dynamic institution in the western coast of the US, which mission is, quote, to promote, support, and grow the electromobility industry in Oregon. Let me welcome my guest today. Hello, Jeff. Can you please introduce yourself and your institution to our audience?
Sure. It's great to be here. So my name's Jeff Allen. I run the Drive Oregon, as you mentioned. And Drive Oregon is about 3 years old, and we are a nonprofit trade association, but we're supported by the state of Oregon to accelerate the growth of the electric vehicle and electric mobility industry here in Oregon. So we have over 100 different member companies and organizations mm-hmm. working with us. And bottom line, we're trying to grow the industry and get more electric vehicles on the road and more chargers installed.
Well, Oregon seems literally like a huge lab on urban mobility. Reading at your website, car sharing programs, charging infrastructures, city planning projects, and smart technologies. To help out our listeners, can you please describe what could they see, for example, if they walk around in Portland or other city in Oregon?
Yeah, well, we really pride ourselves in Portland particularly as being a very livable city. So we have the highest bicycle commuting rates in the United States, and we also have, for the United States, very good transit systems. So we have an electric light rail system, an electric streetcar tram system. We have an aerial tram that's also electric. We also have several different kinds of car sharing systems. So we have Zipcar, which is a point-to-point system. We have Car2Go, which is in a number of European cities as well, which is a one-way. And then we also have Getaround, which is a peer-to-peer car sharing. It's sort of like Airbnb for cars. So you can rent your personal vehicle. And soon we will have a bike share system, a number of other options. And, of course, we have buses. And, you know, it's still the United States, so there's still a lot of cars around. But we like to think it's a very, very walkable city. And a place where you don't have to use a car nearly as much as you do in most of the United States.
But why in Oregon? What makes Oregon such a good place for innovation in urban transportation? From the distance, it looks like you are living the dream of traffic engineers all around the world. Is that so?
Well, yeah, we're planners. I mean, Portland and the state of Oregon have always been pioneers. Our state motto is we love dreamers, and Portland has always been innovative and willing to try different things. You know, the state of Oregon was the first U.S. state to adopt a gasoline tax some 100 years ago. We were really the first place to adopt strong land use planning in the United States. Very famously, back in the 60s and 70s, we turned down plans to build a major freeway and instead put that money into building our light rail system. We took a big parking lot downtown and turned it into an urban square. So we've always been a little bit counterculture, maybe, or a little bit willing to do things our own way.
Pioneers.
Yeah, really pioneers. That's a good way of putting it. And that continues now with more modern, sustainable urban mobility, whether it's electric vehicles or car sharing or intelligent transportation systems.
How about people? Do you perceive a real interest in Oregon citizens about all this innovation? Does Oregon people fancy testing all of this stuff? Or is it just a freak minority around there?
Yeah, no, I mean I mean obviously it's not everybody, but Oregon is generally a very good early adopter market. People are very technology savvy in general. They're very willing to try new things. You know, you can look back to when the first hybrid cars were introduced. Oregon was consistently one of the top two or three markets for those cars. Same thing with electric cars now. Oregon's one of the top two or three markets. You know, and even some of the social media or other kinds of technology, people are very open to that here.
So again, engineer's dream city.
Well, we do have a lot of engineers here. I think part of it is we have a big technology and software industry. You know, Intel has their biggest offices here, a number of other software companies. So I think that's part of it. And again, I think people are also just not afraid to be a little different. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of cities in the U.S. that claim to have created this bumper sticker, but there's a very popular bumper sticker that says "Keep Portland Weird." You see a number of those around.
Huh. And but is it just because people fancy the tech, or do you think that there is a growing environmentalism conscience emerging?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the other thing about Oregon is it's had a really strong environmental ethic, again, for decades. You know, we were the first state in the U.S. to adopt a bottle deposit bill back in the 70s. And again, land use planning. We also in Oregon have a law that makes all of the beaches of the state public. So you can walk from, you'd get wet, but you could walk from the Washington border to the California border. And you're on public land all the way, so there's no private protected beaches. So there's a lot of that kind of sense of loving the place and really caring about the place that carries over into mm-hmm. policy. And so more recently, the state's been a leader on renewable energy and tackling climate change as well. But I think on a lot of these things, even for very dedicated environmentalists, that's not – there's very few people who pick a car based on solely on their environmental concerns. You know, they also want it to be fun to drive. They want it to be to work for their day-to-day life. You know, so it's kind of a combination of caring about the environment and being willing to try new technology and, you know, maybe not having to drive all the time mm-hmm. that, you know, you put those together in a mix and it makes it a place that's very ripe for different kinds of mobility solutions.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. Let's talk about car sharing. You mentioned that you have three options. Could you please explain them a little bit more?
Sure. So Portland was one of the first places in the U.S. to get car sharing. And we started with service, fairly kind of traditional car sharing, if you can say such a thing, that's now become part of Zipcar, which is, you know, cars stationed at places around the city and you rent them and return them where you rented them from. And then we have Car2Go, which is with the little smart cars. And that's a point-to-point service so that you can pick one of those up anywhere you find it and drop it in any legal parking space, and you just swipe your membership card on the window and they charge you by the minute and swipe it again when you're done. And that's been very popular. And then we have what I think is still pretty unique to the United States, this service called Get Around, which is peer-to-peer car sharing. So we can take your personal vehicle and rent it out. And in fact, Drive Oregon, we have a Nissan Leaf that we drive, that we use as a company car, but we also have put it in Get Around so that anyone who wants to try out an electric car here in Portland can mm-hmm. rent ours for half a day or a couple of days, and then the insurance is covered through the rental agreement and so forth.
And you get it back in good conditions?
Yeah, so...
You know, when I told this to my wife, she the first thing she asked was, what happens if they, you know, spoil the car or something?
Yes. So that's a great question. A couple of things. So the insurance is paid for while it's being rented through the rental agreement with GetAround. So they keep part of the proceeds for that. So if there was an accident or damage to the car, that would pay for that. But there's also a rating system. So that
right.
both the driver and it's sort of like Airbnb, right? Both the driver and the owner of the vehicle rate the other person. And so you can exclude people based on their rankings. Mm-hmm. So if they frequently leave French fries in your car or something like that, they're not going to be able to rent for very long.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that's interesting about this is, you know, in the United States, when I was growing up, the car was really the status symbol and the symbol of your freedom and your identity. And I still have a very hard time putting my personal vehicle out there for rental. But what we're seeing is that for younger people, increasingly, the car is an appliance, right? They're no more attached to their cars than they are to their refrigerator or their microwave oven. They're much more interested in their personal electronic device. I had someone from one of the car companies tell me recently, they were in a focus group and one of these young people finally said, look, you don't get it. It's not the driving. It's not that my phone is distracting me from driving. It's that having to drive the car is distracting me from my phone. So we're seeing, especially among the younger people, they don't want the fixed cost and the hassle of owning a car. They just want to be able to use one when they need to. So it's very popular, and I think will become more so, you know, as people like me die off.
I see. You know that here in Europe, car sharing is a bit controversial now, especially since some other classic transportation means like taxi drivers or some other private transportation companies feel that this is unfair competition. So does the Oregon administration care about that, or is reducing emissions and traffic load their main priority now?
Yeah, that's interesting. I was actually in a meeting with one of those services just before this call, which is why I was running late. So, it's definitely an issue here as well that the traditional cab companies struggle against Uber and Lyft. And to some extent, you saw the same things with traditional transit services being concerned that car sharing was going to compete with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to some extent it does. But I think it's also at some level kind of unstoppable, right? It's like trying to prevent people from sharing music files.
Mm-hmm.
Once the genie is out of the bag, I'm mixing metaphors. Once the genie is out of the bottle, it's very hard to imagine how you would prevent somebody from letting someone else use their car.
Mm-hmm.
We have the same issues here with services like Airbnb that allow people to compete with traditional hotels and bed and breakfasts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what we'll see, I mean, it's also just by definition, it's a disruptive technology. So of course it's going to disrupt services and cause some controversy. And I think, though, over the next years, maybe 5 or 10 years, we will see some kind of accommodation, like we've seen with the music services,
mm-hmm.
where you they will find a way to have some regulation to collect some tax revenue, probably combined with some lessening of the existing regulations, mm-hmm. on the kind of legacy transportation services. And I think we'll come to an accommodation, but I think it's somewhat inevitable that we're going to see these kind of peer-to-peer car sharing and ride sharing services.
Mm-hmm. And for how long has this been working? The car sharing mode, I mean.
Well, car sharing, we've had the Zipcar service, or what is now Zipcar, for, gosh, almost 20 years now.
20?
Yeah, I want to say it was 1997 thereabouts that it was first tested here in Portland. Mm-hmm. So at least 15. The Car2Go and Getaround are much newer, just the last couple of years.
Uh-huh.
And we do not yet have Lyft or Uber here in Oregon, uh-huh. but I expect we will in the next few years.
And do you keep track of the, you know, how is this penetrating market in terms of less people buying new cars, or do you have some correlation in that, in this regard?
I think we're just starting to see enough data on that. There's lots of stories and anecdotes about people saying, oh, we gave up our second car because we had Zipcar, or I'm not going to buy a car because I can use Car2Go. I was just talking to someone who's starting to do some analysis of the data from the Lyft service in the Bay Area, looking at what impact does it have on travel patterns. But it's all pretty new.
Mm-hmm.
So I have heard anecdotally that that there's a fair amount of evidence that having good car sharing services actually increases transit use.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard that about the Autolib program in Paris as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you've heard anything there, but
nope.
What I was told was that, and it makes sense, that it becomes much more, it's much easier to take transit into work and then know that if you have to run across town in the middle of the day or you have to run an errand, that you can use a car sharing car,
mm-hmm.
Versus otherwise you might drive in because you don't know what you're going to have to do during the day.
Well, let's go to another big cornerstone in the bunches of projects that Drive Oregon is moving ahead. Let's talk about electric mobility. I've heard that your institution think that electric vehicles are a very good testbed for ITS. Can you please explain us why?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's really how we've gotten at Drive Oregon, how we've gotten involved in intelligent transportation systems is coming from the perspective that, well, two things. One is that Oregon doesn't make cars, but we do have a lot of expertise in electronics and software and in these kind of sustainable urban mobility solutions. So we're very interested in that space, but also that electric vehicles, I think, are the ideal testbed for ITS and for connected car technologies for a couple of reasons. One is that the cars themselves are smarter to start with, right? They have telematics built in. They have more software typically. They already have to be pretty sophisticated in to manage the car systems, to help you find charging stations, to communicate with the charging equipment. So that's one thing. The other is that the drivers tend to be smarter, if you will. They tend to be early adopters of technology, pretty tech savvy, pretty willing to try new things. So I think that also makes them a good sort of living laboratory for mm-hmm. some of these technologies to see how they'll play out in the real world.
Mm-hmm. I think that some of your efforts are also aiming at the charging station infrastructure, right? You know, some opposed to electric vehicles argue that simplifying it a lot, if we all used electric vehicles, we would collapse all the existing electric grids. So what do you think? How is Oregon facing that challenge?
Yeah. Well, in the States, that concern has been pretty thoroughly debunked over the last few years. There have been a number of studies at the national level. I know one major study by the utility industry concluded that we could replace something on the order of 60% of all cars in the U.S. with electric cars tomorrow without having to build a single power plant.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of excess capacity in the power generation system. There may be some local upgrades that need to be made to transmission and distribution systems. But as one of our utility members said, you know, the grid didn't collapse when people started installing air conditioners. And it didn't collapse when people started buying plasma television sets. And those things happened a lot faster than electric vehicles are happening, and they had every bit as much of an impact on the grid. So the discussion here has very quickly moved in the direction of how can electric vehicles strengthen the grid? And a lot of discussion here about vehicle-to-grid technologies. Early on, I think a lot of the interest was in just kind of to put it very simply, can you use the batteries to store renewable power, wind or solar power, and feed it back into the grid? There's still a lot of work in that area, but more and more what people are excited about here is the potential for the vehicles to provide sort of load balancing and frequency regulation services to the grid that don't require discharge and refilling of the battery itself. They're just very real-time adjustments. And in fact, some of it is a matter of just not even pulling battery energy out of the battery at all. Some of it's just a matter of controlling the rate of charge so that in very quick real-time adjustments, if there's a surge in demand on the grid, you can slow down the charging of the vehicles. And it's can be a very cost-effective way to help stabilize the grid. So I think the discussion in the U.S. and certainly in Oregon is more about how do we leverage all the benefits that these vehicles have to the grid.
But where is that energy coming from? That abundant energy you seem to have is Oregon trying to is closing the circle in that sense, putting clean energy sources in service, so to move out all the out of the picture, oil, coal.
Yeah, that's another issue that comes up, has come up a lot here. But again, there have been a number of studies done by the environmental community in the U.S. that have proven pretty clearly that anywhere in the U.S. That you plug in an electric car, it's still going to be better for the environment and certainly for climate change than a gas car. So even in the we have some parts of the country that are highly dependent on very old coal-fired power plants, but electric vehicles still provide benefits over gas vehicles in those areas. And in the Northwest, we're very lucky because we have a lot of hydropower from some major dams, which have some different environmental issues, but very low carbon emissions. And so in Oregon, the CO2 emissions from electric vehicles are about half of CO2 emissions from gas car. And the other thing about that is that the Northwest has very cheap electricity, so the cost of operating the vehicle is also very low. But as I said before, Oregon is also a leader in renewable energy, wind and solar in particular, and we have very aggressive state targets for increasing the share of renewables in our power grid. So that's one of the things I like about electric vehicles is that they're the only kind of car you can buy that gets cleaner as it gets older. But the grid is cleaner.
And do you keep track? Does your institution keep track on how all of this is affecting global emissions of this state?
You know, we don't track that, but the state has done a lot of modeling work in looking at how it can meet its greenhouse gas emission targets. And one of the most striking conclusions the state reached was that they will have to have about 90% of all miles traveled in the state traveled by electric vehicles by 2050 if we're going to meet our state greenhouse gas goals. So it's we have a long way to go to reach that target.
That's cool. Well, we now need to make a short break, but we will be back in just a few seconds, so please stay tuned. Hello again. Do you want to join our community? Please join us. we have a few options for you to choose. We have a Twitter account, a Google Plus website, and a LinkedIn group. For all of them, all you have to do is simply to search for ITS Podcast. It's just ITS Podcast all together, and you will find us. We also have a Facebook page. It's easy. You search for ITSP for ITS Podcast, .ITSS for ITS Society. So in Facebook, you can find us searching ITSP.ITSS. Please go and join us, join our Selectic community, sharing our passion for intelligent transportation science and engineering. Thanks for listening to ITS Podcast. Let's get back to our interview. Very well, we are back with Jeff Allen from Drive Oregon. Well, Drive Oregon has been one of the producers of that amazing conference, the Electric Vehicle Roadmap 7. And you personally opened this very big and interesting conference that took place on July 24 and 25 in downtown Portland. Can you please summarize what was that conference about? I think in this year's edition, it had a special interest on blending electric transportation and that trending topic you mentioned already, that very trendy in our community, connected vehicles. So can you please explain to our listeners about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is the EV Roadmap Conference is something we've been hosting in Oregon since 2009. And this was the seventh one this year. And it's really kind of a graduate level course in electric vehicle deployment where we try and bring together the automakers and the other stakeholders in the industry, along with communities, to talk about what's happening in at sort of the front edge of transportation electrification. What are the issues we're running into? What are the lessons that we've learned? And this year, the theme was making connections, which was partially a play on the need for stakeholders to work together in new and different ways. I mean, I like to say it takes a village to electrify transportation. You have to have utilities and automakers and local governments working together in new and different ways. But also was a reference to the connected car, Internet of Things, intelligent transportation systems space. And as I mentioned, we think electric vehicles are an ideal test bed for a lot of that technology. And we're seeing a lot of the technology and the business models starting in electric vehicles and then filtering down to other kinds of vehicles. Mm-hmm. So we had a number of panels on topics related to this area this year, intelligent transportation systems generally. We had a panel on vehicle automation. We had a panel on wireless charging, on vehicle-to-grid technology, on operating systems for cars. So really, really exploring the space in great detail.
Mm-hmm. Very comprehensive.
Yes, we have something like 75 different speakers across 20 different panels over the course of 2 days. So it's very, very exhausting.
Mm-hmm. I know that there was also a satellite workshop on business opportunities in connected vehicles linked to that conference. I believe Drive Oregon has an open call right now for grants in that sense. Is that correct?
We do. Yeah, we are primarily an economic development initiative. And so one of the things we did was to organize a side workshop focused on really specifically and in more detail talking about where are the business opportunities that are emerging as a result of new developments in vehicle software, in mobile connected applications, in communication systems between vehicles and infrastructure? As I mentioned before, Oregon has a lot of software and application development companies, a lot of folks working particularly on open source platforms here. And we really wanted to bring those folks in who might not have realized how much is happening in the automotive and vehicle space with software and embedded systems and so forth. And in addition to the event, we have announced the availability of grant funds up to $50,000 US for projects and companies that are working in this space. They require a 5-to-1 match from other funding sources, whether it's a government grant or private capital. And those proposals, that call for proposals is open until September 1st of this year.
That's great. Well, we are reaching the end of this interview. Let me place one last question, Jeff. This is a kind of a classic question we make to many of our interviewees. You know, the title of a recent article at the journal IEEE Spectrum went as provocative as this: "Robot, you can drive my car. Autonomous driving will push humans into the passenger seat." That is something, right? So, what do you think? Will we eventually be pushed back into the passenger seat? Do you dream of that moment to happen once proved computers can drive better and safer than humans?
Well, you know, that's been getting a lot of the attention here as well. The Google self-driving car is kind of fun to talk about. But I come at it from a social science perspective, and I think I've seen statistics that 75% of drivers believe they are above average. So I think the problem is we all want somebody else to let the robot drive their car, but we all personally think we can do better than the robot can. And I think the challenges there are not the technology challenges. The challenges are driver acceptance, legal issues, the business case. So I think what's sort of much more interesting and also is going to happen a lot sooner are some of the things around the edges. You know, I'm sure that cruise control was a radical concept when it first came out. You know, the idea that you would let the car control how fast it's going. Mm-hmm. And I think what you're going to see initially is going to look more like enhanced cruise control. And you're already seeing that, obviously, with cruise control that will automatically slow you down if you're coming up too fast on someone, or will rattle the steering wheel if you start to swerve out of your lane. We're starting to see some of the things we talked about at the conference were technologies that talk to the streetlights and adjust your speed so that you hit the green lights. Technologies that will not only help you parallel park, but might valet park your car for you. So I think most of us are willing to admit that we don't like to parallel park in a busy city street. So we might be willing to let the computer help with that. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of value in those kind of technologies that are more tweaks around the edges. I think we'll also see one of the things that we're working on a lot in Oregon is we'll see more of the vehicle automation, not in passenger cars, but in other kinds of vehicles, forklifts, airport equipment, agricultural equipment. There's a lot of interest in using aerial drones here in agriculture that could be automated. Mm-hmm. Or again, even semi-automated. We work with one of our member companies has an electric all-terrain vehicle, which a lot of farmers here use. So if you picture you're going down a row of wine grapes or a row of orchard trees, and you're trying to check on the quality of the grapes, or you're trying to spray them with some chemical with one hand while you're steering the vehicle with the other hand, it's very unsafe. And so even just technology that allows those vehicles to move in a more or less straight line at a constant distance from the row can have a huge impact on productivity and doesn't face nearly the same legal problems or acceptance problems that a car going down the highway faces. So mm-hmm. I think there'll be a lot more practical applications before we get to the driverless Google cars.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. This has been a really interesting interview. I appreciate your participation, and I'm really sure that our listeners will also be delighted to see something this big is moving in Oregon regarding a possible cleaner and, why not, fancier mobility in the years to come. So thank you, Jeff.
Thank you. And if your listeners would like to know more about what's going on in Oregon, we will be hosting another EV roadmap conference in summer of 2015. And that information is up on our website at driveoregon.org. And we also have free email updates that we send out. And of course, we're on Twitter and Facebook as well.
Well, that's great. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye. Well, we have to say goodbye now. It's time to get back. We really hope to receive many comments about this episode. So please go ahead and tell us what do you think. This podcast is sponsored by the IEEE Intelligent Transportation Systems Society, website designed and managed by the Innovation Center for the Information Society at the University of Las Palmas de Gran Canaria in Spain. Soundtrack developed by Rubicon, language advisory by Manuel Arbelo and Professor Sean Williams from Clemson University, South Carolina. We'll be back soon bringing you again the cutting edge of science at the Intelligent Transportation Systems podcast. Thanks for listening. Drive safe.